Greetings, holiday shoppers. There are now 41 shopping days left until Christmas, and you know what that means. That means it's time for another episode of Christmas Creeps, your one-stop shop for holiday movies and TV shows all year round. My name is Joseph Wade. I will be your host for this evening. Here with me tonight is my co-host, Mr. Bradford. Mr. Bradford, welcome back to the show, mon frere.
Ah, thank you, mon petit chou. How's it going?
It's going great. Like we said on our last episode, we're kind of missing Home for the Holidays a little bit, so we thought, let's extend it into November with a little programming block we're calling Shrieksgiving, where we're going to talk about some more holiday horror films, because why the heck not? And on this episode, we're discussing the 2022 horror film, The Killing Tree. Not to be confused with the hardcore punk band of the same name, but that would have been amazing. And this is definitely the kind of film where you need to just crack open a cold one and just let it ride, because...
Revel in the madness.
Yes, because there's a lot of madness to talk about tonight. Brad, what's new with you, buddy?
Oh, you know, not that much, honestly. had fun watching this. More than I thought I would.
Did you seriously, or are you joshing me? Because I can take it.
I think it all hinges on how dumb this movie knows it is, which I think it does for the most part.
I believe it does, which counts for a lot here.
Yes.
And we will definitely get into that, but also I think it bears discussing sort of like where it sits in sort of the modern glut of direct-to-streaming Christmas movies nowadays. Yeah. And
you gotta differentiate between...
Yes, you gotta differentiate yourself from all the other Christmas movies out there some way, somehow. And The Killing Tree did it by going as balls to the wall crazy as it possibly could in its opening like 2 minutes, and I appreciate that immensely. But you know what, we're getting way ahead of ourselves, because before we can even talk about The Killing Tree, there's just one thing we got to do.
Can check,
buddy.
What you working with
tonight? You know, because this movie features Christmas party and I wanted to be kind of seasonal, I got myself a Baron Skiff Apple Orchard's Cranberry Hard Cider.
That sounds incredibly festive.
Oh, that is a hearty cranberry cider. Very sour, very sweet, a little full, a lot of sap. Ooh, that's refreshing.
You know some cider terms. I've never even heard these before because I'm not a cider person. Wow, I'm impressed.
Brad, Don't tell me you don't know a Christmas Vacation quote when you hear it.
Oh, God. What if I told you I've never seen Christmas Vacation?
We may have to do an emergency episode then, my friend.
Yeah, but you guys already covered it, so I didn't want to do that. I just have to watch it just for my own edification so that, right, I can call myself a bona fide Christmas movie podcaster. I know it's been a glaring hole, and I've been meaning to watch it for a long time but never got around to it.
That's okay. Hey, there's no time like the present. Maybe this is the year for it. But Brad, what are you working with over there tonight, buddy?
I have a Dogfish Head Pennsylvania Tuxedo. I think this is a seasonal release because it was sitting with all the Christmas beers.
Okay.
It is a pale ale with spruce tips. I went to the Big Fancy beer and wine store looking for something specific, which was Grimm Super Spruce, which is one of my favorite beers ever, hands down, because it's amazing. It's also a spruce beer, but it's like salted and it's a gosa. So it's like kind of sour and salty and sprucey. Amazing. If you see it, get it. You won't regret it. I know it sounds weird at first, but do it. They didn't have it, but I found this, and it's pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. I'm enjoying it a lot. It's pretty forward on the spruce. It's pretty dry. I'm liking it.
That is where I might have to take a pass because I don't know about the spruceness of it all in my drinks.
It's not like you're putting your mouth on a Christmas tree, but it's there. Like, there's notes of it.
I mean, it's so. Does it have like a hint of gin, kind of?
Yeah, you could say it's kind of like the juniper situation in gin.
That's kind of what I figure.
It's not overpowering, but it's definitely there.
Okay.
I think this definitely has more of a spruce aftertaste than the Grim.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Grim just has all of this other stuff going on with the sourness of the Gosa and the salt and everything like that. It's a little more balanced than this. This is a little more raw. This has a bit more of an edge to it.
Hmm.
But I'm not complaining.
Yeah, I may have to track that down. That could be an interesting experience.
I still have depending on how crazy it gets, I also have a Star Hill Christmas Light Spruce IPA, which is a little bit sweeter, but I'm not going to crack into that unless needs must. So
right,
we'll see how this pint treats me first.
Sure thing, yeah. Well, now that we've got our brews out of the way and we're locked and loaded for tonight, so let's talk about The Killing Tree a little bit.
It's a movie. You said direct to video. That's a shocker.
I mean, I'm assuming. I mean, because it's currently streaming on Amazon and Tubi, and if this is a Tubi original, if ever I've seen one, I don't know that for a fact, but I just feel it in my bones.
I think you wouldn't be wrong about that.
Right. I do know this was a British production, an exceedingly British production.
It's very, very British. It's so British.
Brad, if you had to guess what the director's name was, what would you guess?
Nigel? Am I close?
You're kind of close. You're on the right track. The director's name was... The Killing Tree was directed by one Rhys Frake Waterfield.
That's pretty British. Okay. Yeah, this...
He's directed another movie that you've probably heard of, and it came out this year.
That I've probably heard of.
Yes. Now that Winnie the Pooh is in the public domain, you can make whatever you want out of it. And this is the guy that made Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. A Winnie the Pooh horror film.
Might have to track that down. I was a pretty big Pooh fan when I was little.
Yeah.
So
that's out there, folks.
What's the big deal? The thing with Pooh is you can use him. You just can't have him in the red shirt because that's like their trade dress version of Pooh.
Well, that's funny because on the poster, Pooh is very much wearing a red shirt, but it's like a red, like plaid flannel shirt.
Like more of a Paddington angle there. I guess Paddington wears a blue duffel coat, but
right. But
anyhow,
it's just...
cool.
And I love the fact that it lists the writers of the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey as Rhys Frake Waterfield and A.A. Milne. Like, okay, sure.
I mean, he contributed the core. Conceit, I suppose.
I suppose, yeah. But we're going back. We're talking about The Killing Tree tonight, which is a slasher movie where the conceit is that, I mean, it's in the title, the tree is going to kill some people. And I think I was expecting this to be very lazy about the way that the tree kills people. And in a way, I was right, but not in the way I expected.
Yes and no.
Because while it's true, the tree kills most of its victims the same way, this movie gets a lot of mileage out of its very low budget because the special effects are pulling a lot of heavy lifting here.
Yeah. So it did the right move. It went in a very cartoonish direction, which I was not expecting at first.
Right.
You were telling me about, like, you watching this movie. I was like, the tree escapes the house. And I was like, how does the tree escape the house? It's a tree.
It literally grows legs and jumps out the window.
It kind of waddles around, which is kind of endearing.
I mean, there's two versions of the tree, and they're very different. But that's what I kind of love about this, is because no fucks are given here.
There's no continuity whatsoever. It's either he's either like a bumbling idiot or he's the fucking Slender Man Babadook love child that's like ripping people apart.
He is either He's either a stuntman wearing a Christmas tree as a costume, stumbling around a house, or he's a 20-foot-tall CGI monstrosity. There is no continuity, and I love that.
It's pretty good, I must say.
Because it is so jarringly different that I have to imagine they did it on purpose.
So, I guess I can do a quick plot synopsis.
Sure, why not? Because, I mean, you kind of know what's coming, but...
okay.
Yeah.
So we have a couple, Clayton Slater and Morgan Slater, who 1 year ago, at the time of this movie, were serial killers who were kind of killing in the name of Christmas. They were killing kids that they essentially thought were not embodying the true spirit of Christmas, and they killed 12 people. We get this info dump as Morgan is trying to bring Clayton Black back to life after he had been executed for these crimes. Basically, their hit list was a string of like TikTok screenshots that they strung up on their mantle place.
Yeah.
So
it's like they're basically targeting TikTok influencers. Like, okay.
Yeah. Who among us, right? No. Yeah. Anyways. Maybe. Don't cut it out. It's fine. I kid. In Minecraft. No. The kids are all right. Where was I? So she...
I mean, you opened the door. You said the word Minecraft. Welcome to video game chat, folks.
I'm so glad you actually brought that up, because the main guy who is in the tree and is very frustrated at being a tree reminds me so much of like the campy Xenoblade Chronicles voice acting.
God, yeah.
Are you familiar with Xenoblade Chronicles and
I've seen enough clips of it to know what you're talking about, yes.
The fun thing about Xenoblade Chronicles is most RPGs and most other games for that matter, when they get an English dub, it's in American English, right?
Yeah.
But the fun thing about Xenoblade Chronicles, all of them, is that they instead choose voice actors from the British Isles for their characters. So Xenoblade Chronicles came out originally for the Wii, and it was this big, expansive RPG, and everybody wanted it. And for whatever boneheaded reason, Nintendo of America thought that it either wouldn't sell or wasn't worth the level of effort to bring it over stateside. But Nintendo of Europe was like, hell yeah, bring it on. So they did all of the localization work, including doing the dub. And of course, they're in Europe, so when it comes time to make the English dub, they hired all local actors. And then eventually, because of Project Rainfall, which was like a mail-in campaign that people were doing to get these bigger sort of AAA Wii games released in the West, Xenoblade eventually comes out in the US, but Nintendo of America, being Nintendo of America, just basically shoved it out the door. It's the, you know, it's the European image. Whatever, there you go.
Yeah.
Xenoblade in English, have at it. But everybody was so enamored with the fact that the dub was done in British English when they did the three games remaining in the series, or the next three games in the series that have come out, X, 2, and 3, they retained that sort of casting direction.
Yeah.
And so all of the dubs have always been, you know, English, Scottish, and Welsh individuals doing these characters. But that's the reason why it is, and it's just a fun little tidbit, if you didn't know, because of its weird lineage,
right? And you kind of get you get some of that with the voice actor they get to do the tree in this.
The tree is very much like there's these gruff guys in two that are like, don't forget me, like rah, 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 rah. they're channeling like a mid boss in Xenoblade Chronicles to a T,
right?
And I love it. He's so frustrated that he's a tree, and who hates it. He hates being a tree so much, and he's not even a tree, and I didn't realize this until I watched the movie. He's an artificial tree.
Yes, that makes it even better. But, and I put a couple of clips, or just I put a couple of screenshots on Twitter because as I was watching, I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And somebody literally, as we're recording this, just pointed this out, and I didn't notice it. He goes, weird, where you'd expect a pentagram, they've drawn what looks like a Star of David on the floor. And they've placed the artificial tree in it to resurrect Slayton. They put the tree in the middle of this...
Clayton Slater,
which is...
And it's S-L-A-Y-T-E-R, because of course it is.
Yes. Because of course it has to be.
Because like, nothing is too subtle. There's no such thing as subtlety in this Phoenix Wright-ass movie.
No stone is left unturned. But no, I didn't even notice this until somebody pointed it out to me, and it's in the screenshots that I posted. Like, she draws a pentagram on the floor, but it's not a pentagram. It's literally the Star of David.
Well, they're a weird couple, and we're already getting some mixed messages because they're like talking about killing in the name of the Lord, and they have crucifixes up in their house, and yet she's doing what one would assume is like a satanic resurrection ritual, but
right.
It's actually the Star of David. I don't know.
It's mixed messages, but also it's like kind of a weird connotation that I don't really want to dig into too much. But the point is,
I think it's just because a Christmas tree is a triangle and they put two triangles. I think they didn't think that far ahead. I don't know.
Probably not. But the fact remains, like, she puts the this symbol on the ground. She puts the artificial tree in the middle. And I think her plan is that she's going to resurrect Slater using the tree, but somehow, some way, the resurrection occurs and he becomes the tree. Like, the tree is the new vessel for his soul.
Right, because she misreads the directions, because it had to be an object of similar mass, and she thought that would just be consumed. Also, dude must be very lightweight if he's the same mass as an artificial tree.
Well,
even a real tree that size is not that heavy. It's probably, like 30 pounds?
If even. But, yeah. when we see him later in flashbacks, he is, like, a gangly, very kind of scrawny dude. So, like, I kind of buy it, but still.
Yeah. So, she thought she was just putting mass in the middle of the summoning circle in order to further this thing along. But, no, she actually selected the vessel that his soul was going to go into. And in this case...
It's a Christmas tree.
It's an artificial tree.
And the tree immediately like sits up, stands up, goes to the mirror and looks in the mirror. And you get this amazing shot where you're looking over the shoulder of a Christmas tree, staring at himself in the mirror and just going, what the fuck?
What?
That's pure cinema right there, folks. I don't know what else to call it.
Oh, man.
But then
the places movies take us, huh?
Yeah, that's Dr. Seuss did not prepare me for this one. Oh, the places you'll go in cinema. So Slater accidentally murders Morgan by slicing her throat with his tree limbs. Oops. Sorry.
My bad. I was very afraid and not used to this tree body, which is what he tells his wife as she's bleeding out on the floor.
Yeah.
I understand. I understand, Mr. Tree Man.
Happens to the best of us, sir.
Yes.
But the main action of the plot then kicks in where we meet our main character and soon to be final girl, Faith, whose parents were some of the victims of the original killing spree a year ago. And it's a year later since that spree happened, and she's about to sell the house. But before she does, she throws a huge Christmas party for all of her friends, because why not?
All of her friends and one elderly couple.
Yeah. Who sadly I don't think make it to the party. Or do they? I don't recall.
I thought they talked to her in the house and then they
Okay,
left.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. So they get got as they're leaving. Okay, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway. But then we begin this very strange the first act almost kind of loses me completely because it's like flashback present day, and it's setting up a lot of stuff that doesn't matter. Where were we? Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to get too bogged down in talking about the plot of any slasher movie. So,
because it doesn't really matter.
There's none of it really. And especially in this case, it really doesn't matter. But suffice it to say, the tree makes his way to Faith's home to finish the job because, you know, she's still alive and he wants to finish his work.
So we got to talk about some of these kills, right? Order.
Absolutely.
The kill queue.
Absolutely.
So we're introduced to Faith's friend, Cindy, who is a young lady who's got a side hustle going, being a lady of the night. And I was like, okay, for sure. She's definitely in the kill queue. And I was not wrong about that. I really was rooting for Cindy because she's got a good head on her shoulders. Unfortunately, she doesn't make it. No, the first person that gets killed in the modern, it gets killed in present day in this movie, other than his wife Morrigan, is a random drunkard who wants to fight the tree.
Yes.
He just starts punching the tree. That's all.
He reminds me. Do you remember the drunk guy in Santa Jaws?
Yeah.
Reminds me of that dude. The drunk elf.
Yes.
Oh, more horror movies need to like make good use of like drunk people because those are like, it's pure entertainment.
Yes. So the tree Clay Slater is wandering around.
Can I also point out he's wandering around, the tree is literally looking at a map to try and figure out where Faith's house is.
It's fucking Looney Tunes shit and I love it.
It is. He's standing in the middle of the woods and the Christmas tree is holding a map and the drunk dude just walks right up to him and starts trying to fight him.
Just starts laughing at him and starts punching the tree because who among us wouldn't? Oh man. So Clayton the tree sees a car coming and he settles down in the middle of the road and it's the elderly couple that are family friends of Faith's,
right?
And they get out to try to figure out what's going on with the tree and they mention Faith in front of him and he's like, oh, they know where Faith is,
right?
And the tree murders both of them and steals their car and drives to Faith's house.
Just drives back the way they came. So like the one kill where he just stabs the husband to death outside the car, but then he uses his Christmas lights to like snake their way into the car to choke out the older woman. So this, yeah, like the first instance where you're like, oh, they're gonna use every like Christmas tree thing to their advantage here. And they kind of do.
There's kind of two main, we get some variants, but there's two main genres of kill in this movie.
Yeah.
And they're either the Christmas tree using its tendrils, even though it's a fake tree, it's got like big woody tendrils because sure, why not?
Why not? Yeah.
And then it using its strings of Christmas lights, which it seems to have an infinite supply of because
sure,
why not?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The third strain, however,
yes,
is when it just decides to rip people straight in half.
It does do that.
Which happens, which, believe it or not, happens multiple times.
And they really waste an opportunity. So,
and we're going to talk about that right now because the next two kills that happen are directly related.
Okay.
Because he makes his way to the house and there's the young couple that's hanging out poolside. They're getting ready to do the dirty in front of the pool, which is a great thing to do in England on Christmas Eve.
in the middle of rural England in December.
In the middle of the night.
Right.
So they're getting ready to do the dirty, and then the tree comes up, grabs the girl by her leg with his Christmas lights, grabs the dude, and just rips him straight in half. And then
straight
down the middle, dunks her into the water, tries to drown her until she escapes, gets into the cabana, and then the tree just stabs her. It's kind of anticlimactic, if I'm being honest.
It's very anticlimactic. They seem a little bit what's the word here I'm looking for here? They seem a little bit. They show some restraint with the gore. Anytime anybody's getting like absolutely brained or gored, it's either like low light or kind of far away.
Yeah, far away and like obvious CGI.
And I think it's probably because of their low budget. It's not through any puritanical sense of not wanting to show you somebody's skull getting caved in by a root. But
right, the other possibility is that it did in fact film this in the dead of winter, and outside in the middle of the night, fake blood can only get you so far, because I bet that freezes real quick.
That's true.
So you do what you must.
Okay.
So
we have that kill going on, and while that's going on, Faith's friend Becky dresses up in a Christmas cracker costume and is very excited about telling Faith about a big surprise she has, and they go on a walk outside, and then they go to play a game of tennis where Faith is blindfolded and has to hit balls back based on the sound, I guess? And it's a game they used to play, and every time she hits a ball, Becky gets to tell her part of her, like, give her a hint about what her special surprise is going to be. And there's, like, a whole 3-4 minute sequence of them just, like, talking to each other and talking about the special surprise that Becky has to tell Faith.
Meanwhile, Becky is still dressed in the Christmas cracker costume, and it's freaking hilarious.
She is. And lo and behold, who should rock up but...
Oh, but Slater himself.
In his giant-ass Titan tree form at this point.
And having seen the kill that you just saw and seeing Becky in her cracker costume, you know exactly what's about to happen to her. And it's very unfortunate.
It's a wasted opportunity, because I think there's only like 30 or 45 seconds between these kills.
Right.
At most. Like, and it would have been really clever if they had done the Becky thing where he's cracking open a Christmas cracker. If that right. were the first time he does it. But no. They do the pool one first.
And it bummed me out, because you see Becky in the costume, and that's exactly where my mind went. I'm like, oh, she's going to get torn apart, something awful.
She's going to get cracked.
And somebody else and gets
gonna
cracked
a,
first.
There's going to be a little hat inside, and maybe some bonbons.
or a very, like, a very gross one-liner about, you know, the kill that just happened or something, you know.
A temporary tattoo.
A sticker of a Christmas tree. But no, they kind of ruin it by doing the same kill on somebody else first.
It's the biggest wasted opportunity in this entire movie, I think.
And honestly, if that's the worst thing that happens to us tonight, you know, this movie's doing pretty good.
I will be honest. My expectations were so low going into this movie, and I had a good time.
I'm glad you feel that way, and I'm going to echo that, because when I watched this movie, let me set the stage for you. When I put this on, I was and still am on like very little sleep right now, just for, you know, personal circumstances at home. We got a sick person in the house, but so we had a lazy day and we watched like 4 movies in a row. And the thing that capped off the night for me was The Killing Tree. And I think I was just punch drunk enough to just really roll with it and really enjoy it. So yeah, the tree chases Faith back into the party, and he mostly just, this is like the big sort of carnage stampede where he's just stabbing people left and right
as they're all running out of the party.
Right. And this, if I'm being honest, this is where it kind of tries or starts to lose me. Cause like, okay, it's mayhem and there's not a lot going on here, except for the scene where a girl starts trying to shoot the tree with a shotgun.
Yes.
And he discovers he's bulletproof because he is, in fact, a fake Christmas tree.
He is an artificial tree.
Yes.
And that already precludes anybody trying to light him on fire, which when at the outset of this movie, when the title was The Killing Tree, I was like, oh, okay, somebody's definitely going to light this tree on fire as the method to kill it at the end of the movie. Not so much.
Which, spoiler alert, does happen, but not really the way you think.
No, it's a lot weirder than you think.
Right. But then comes, I think, my actual favorite scene in the movie.
Yes.
Where the tree is stalking through the house looking for Faith, and he with a knife, but he makes a pit stop to play Silent Night on a piano.
Poorly play Silent Night on a piano, because he's an artificial tree. He doesn't have very good motor skills. So he's just kind of banging on the piano, singing Silent Night.
But then the movie takes over, and this very, like, sincere, like, arrangement of Silent Night starts playing. And he's stalking through the house to this very like somber, silent night. And it just kind of clicked in my head, like, this tree is killing people because he's mad that people took Christ out of Christmas.
Yes.
And just the conviction of that is just mind-boggling to me. And again, we don't have to get into like that whole kettle of fish or whatever you want to call that.
It's an interesting angle for the villain of a Christmas movie that I haven't seen before, for sure.
That's true, yeah. Like, you get your, pardon the pun, diehards who are really anti, you know, commercialism and Christmas. And I understand that, and I get that, and we comment on that from time to time.
I think it's an interesting angle that you don't see very often, but is a pervasive part of the culture surrounding Christmas, this whole concept of the war on Christmas or taking Christ out of Christmas.
Oh yeah, like this guy is definitely angry at Starbucks for saying happy holidays.
Yes.
You know, yeah. That kind of thing.
To the point of murder.
To the point of murder. Oh man. But the Silent Night bit comes and goes. The tree is still stalking through the house looking for Becky. Not Becky, Faith, looking for Faith. And
so most of her friends have gotten God at this point.
Except for Cindy, who shows up and distracts Slater so that Faith can escape.
Yes. Cindy is I thought Cindy was going to be very early in the kill queue. She makes it second to last.
And good for her.
You know? I like Cindy. I like Cindy as a character. She's got a good head on her shoulders. She's a good kid.
She's a good egg, yeah.
Keep it up, Cindy.
And so Faith escapes the house. Cindy gets got, unfortunately. Rips Cindy. And Faith runs off into the woods and hides in the woods. And I hate to have to bring this up, but we get a very ham-fisted Batman reference here.
It's so out of left field, and it's so bad.
It's the worst because, you know, she's hiding in the woods and it's dark, and Slater says, "You think the dark in the woods is your ally? Well, I was born in it, molded in it, born from this very soul." And it's, yeah, okay,
yeah,
all right, Bane.
Like, you told me that I made a joke earlier when I was watching it.
Yeah,
I said, I think my quote was, "You'll believe a tree can drive a car."
Yeah.
And then you said, "Well, speaking of DC, keep an eye out for a Batman reference later." And I was like, okay, maybe I'll get it. Maybe I'll see it. Maybe I'll get it. No, it's the most ham-fisted, normie-ass Batman reference possible.
Right, Bane voice.
If you've had a pulse in the last 10 years, you will get this Batman reference.
Oh boy. But then comes like an actual moment of suspense that I wasn't exactly expecting out of this movie, where she's hiding behind a tree and it's completely dark. And then you realize the tree is stalking her. He's turned off his Christmas lights. And then when he pops out to scare her, the lights jump back on. And
I didn't even notice that, but I was thinking like earlier in the movie when he's like telling himself to calm down in front of the car, I thought he was going to turn his lights off.
See, that would have been clever too. But I also noticed like in some scenes as he's talking, the lights flicker to like match his voice.
Okay. Yeah.
Which is kind of neat. Which, I mean, I know some people do that. Some people have rigged their Christmas lights to like blink to the time of music and stuff.
Yeah.
So that's not that crazy of an idea.
No.
But I just like
especially
the idea
when you
that
have a human soul inside of your tree.
I mean, get yours today, but just the idea that he would like use the Christmas lights to his advantage to scare someone. I just thought like that's pretty clever. I like that.
That's a clever little scare.
Clever little scare. And then I don't want to, I wish we had done this earlier, but like if we had taken bets on what the craziest thing this movie could have done would be, it's gotta be this ending.
Right. I don't think either of us would have guessed this in a million years.
Right. They essentially do the Dreamcatcher ending on this movie, which is not a phrase I would have ever expected to say in a million years.
It's wild.
Because guess who shows up at the end to save the day? It's Faith's mother. also as a Christmas tree.
Also in a tree.
I think she's credited as the angel tree, even. So.
Oh my god. And then we have like a friggin' Super Saiyan battle between the tree, you know, between Clayton and this tree that's blanketed in a halo of light.
Right.
It's wild. It's weirder than you expect. They're both using their tendrils and beating the shit out of each other.
And eventually,
and then I think the angel tree just explodes on top of the other tree. It turns it into a pile. Turns it into a fucking Breath of the Wild.
Just a Breath of the Wild campfire scene.
It's so weird.
They merge into a ball of light and turn into a burning pile of cinders. Like, okay.
But like a perfectly arranged like little campfire.
Exactly.
That's why I say a Breath of the Wild campfire, because like if you put a pile of wood down and you hit flint or throw a fire fruit at it, it always turns in the exact same model of fire.
And then what happens next? Faith decides to sit down and wait till morning. And like it fades out and fades back in, and it's morning, and Cindy has discovered her out in the woods. Wait a minute.
Wait a second.
Cindy's dead. No, she's not, because guess what? All of this that has just transpired was in fact a dream.
Da 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 da.
Except for the fact that her parents are dead. That definitely happened.
That definitely happened.
All of the shit involving
Clayton being a tree.
All of the shit involving Clayton being a tree was in fact a panic-induced freak out, and all of her friends are still alive. Thank goodness. They walk away from the house at the end. The end.
They showed Herculean restraint by not hedging. They hedged a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because it ends on a shot of a tree, and then it has like red eyes pop out.
Right. That's.
But yeah, they didn't do the like, or was it, you know, which is I was completely expecting this movie to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, there's tinsel laying around in the forest where she had her freak out or whatever, you know, the usual cop outs.
Yeah. Like a tree branch that's like crawling itself along the floor of the forest. Like, oh, we're going to see him again. No, we're not.
Yeah.
No, we're not.
Yeah. No, we're not.
Though I wouldn't count it out. Like, I would actually kind of love to see if they tried to produce a Killing Tree Part 2.
A treequel?
A tree. A treequel.
The treequel. That time I got reincarnated as a Christmas tree.
Listen, James Cameron walked into a boardroom one day, wrote The Killing Tree on a wall, and then put an S at the end of it and made it a dollar sign.
No, Miriam's a tree. Morrigan's a tree, too.
Morrigan's a tree.
We didn't mention the scene where he's in the house and a normal-ass Christmas tree lights up and he thinks it's Morrigan for a second and then gets really angry that it's not.
Yes, I forgot about that.
It's almost endearing for like a slasher movie villain.
It's kind of clever. Like
I feel bad for him.
Yeah.
It's not his wife come back as, as another cheap ass Christmas tree.
We're going to save that for the sequel for sure.
Yeah. Yes.
You know what I would really love to see though, is if they, what this movie really reminded me of was the late 90s, Jack Frost slasher movie where the same thing happens. A serial killer, on his way to death row, winds up becoming a killer snowman and starts stalking the people that did this to him. And I would really love to see The Killing Tree versus Jack Frost.
Ooh.
That's a movie right there.
That'd be a fun.
Yeah. So if any enterprising filmmaker out there, you know, Reese Frake Waterfield, if you're listening, I've got an idea for Killing Tree Part 2. But alas, we have to take this to the crankometer now, I do believe. Unless Brad's got any final thoughts on The Killing Tree.
Again, we really need to codify writing down what our expectations were before we watch a movie.
Yeah.
Because I think this one especially is very different than what I expected.
Yeah, and I'll go ahead and kind of lay this out right now. Part of how we watch these movies sometimes is one of us will just kind of randomly say, you know what, I'm ready to watch some trash. And this was very much the case, because like I had kind of had this in my list from last year and looked at the trailer, saw, okay, Killer Christmas Tree, that could be fun. Also saw, this movie is 73 minutes, and I love that.
Thank you very much for that.
So put those two together, and we wound up watching The Killing Tree. And I'm glad we did, because this turned out much better than I had expected. But, you know, we're not saying this is any great shakes here. We're just saying this met and exceeded our very low expectations.
Yes.
Crankometer time, Brad?
Yes, I believe so.
Let's do it. So, folks, the crankometer is our really stupid rating for rating Christmas movies. The x-axis is how Christmassy a film is. The y-axis is how good the film is. And then we kind of make a scatter plot throughout the year of, you know, where all these movies land. It's a fun time. Anyway, The Killing Tree, Brad, how Christmassy is this? I'm struggling to say negative.
No. There's no way. It's kind of Christmassy. Of course, you have musical stings. You have really great use of Silent Night. Of course, you've got O Tenenbaum in there right at the beginning.
From
the drop. One of the main characters is a dang Christmas tree. Like, come on.
Right.
It's got Christmas lights all over it. It's festooned with Christmas fixins. Obviously, this could have taken place at any other time of the year, but you know, she could have taken the Christmas tree out of storage in August, but that would be kind of weird, right?
It would be inappropriate, yeah.
It would be a little inappropriate.
I'm willing.
I want to say another good idea for a sequel is we go the Beetlejuice 2 route, and the Christmas tree ends up in Hawaii on vacation for the sequel. Just speaking of like inappropriate settings. No.
Which is also kind of what happened with Jack Frost 2.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, Jack Frost 2 is like the family that he terrorized in the first film goes on vacation in the Caribbean, and they're like, there's no way this could happen again. Oh yeah. He follows them down there.
Oh man. Okay. So somebody already went there. Okay. Never mind. So maybe like a 2? It's pretty good. It's pretty Christmassy.
It's pretty dang Christmassy. Like, I'm actually willing to give this a 3 because its heart is in the right place. And having the killer's motive be, like, Christmas-related counts for a lot as well. Even though, like, I fully understand and realize that, like, you know, killing in the name of religion is a very hot button thing right now.
And a thing that people should not be doing in any circumstance for any religion. Let's just say that.
One side or the other, yes. Just depiction is not endorsement, so that's not really the movie's fault. But I'm willing to give this a 3 at least.
I think a 3 is a good... I'm good with a 3, okay. Yes.
Now then, the y-axis, the quality quotient, this is where things are going to get interesting. How good is The Killing Tree?
I think this movie gets a lot of credit for knowing exactly how fucking stupid it is from the drop.
Yes.
It knows it's like a giant piece of garbage and the dumbest thing ever. But it doesn't like, here's the thing. It toes that line and it doesn't wink at the camera and like, it doesn't play it up for you. You know what I'm trying to say here?
Yeah, it knows
like Anna and this is the movie that Anna and the Apocalypse wishes it was. Ooh. As far as like tongue-in-cheek campy, you know what I'm trying to say?
No,
here, right?
I know what you're saying. Like it goes where that movie really wanted to go but couldn't quite get there.
It threaded the needle that movie was trying to thread.
Yes. And
like it's so dumb and it knows it, but it plays it the right way.
It leans so hard into it that you can't help but like sheer for it in spite of itself.
But it doesn't like, it doesn't Office Jim mug at the camera like so many other movies do. And
right. This is not like an Asylum level knockoff where it's just trying to be stupid and you know, gets your viewing, you know, dollars or whatever.
Yes.
It's not trying to pander to you. It's just, here's a dumb idea. Let's go for it. Let's see what happens.
Yes, it is dumb. Yes, you're going to have a good time.
Yes. I just wanted to bring up like just this phenomenon now of how like streaming Christmas movies and made for TV Christmas movies has become this like cottage industry now where there's no identity or soul to any of them. And like, I will freely admit we don't watch them, so we can't really say this with any certainty, but like, I just feel it. Like, I don't know what any of them have to separate themselves. You know,
it's there to exist and be something that is new for the year. And that is it. It is white noise.
It is white noise. Yeah. So when you see something like this, it's also white noise, but it's made by people who know how to entertain. Like, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm willing to give this guy the benefit of the doubt that his killer Winnie the Pooh movie is, yeah, maybe just trying to get, you know, those hate watches or those headline clicks. But, like, he knows what he's doing here. And this is not, like, this is not a content mill American, you know, Netflix Christmas movie thing. This is something different.
Not that it's a little different.
Not that it's great, but it's kind of trying, and I appreciate that.
Right.
So what I'm saying is I'm going to give this a 2.
I think an actual 2 is generous. I would, if it were just me calling the shots, I'd probably give it a 1.
Right.
But I'm willing to go up to a 2 with you.
I'd say it's a 2, but with the understanding that we are very much rounding up.
I think the main thing is it had the element of surprise.
That's a big part of
it. I totally expected this to be like a boring slog or doing the aforementioned, yes, it's stupid, but yes, we're going to play it up. And yeah, it's, hey, remember Sharknado? Here's a killer Christmas tree. You know, that sort of thing.
It has enough of its own ideas and enough of its own identity that like it kind of coasts by on that.
It pulls it off to somehow.
Somehow, some way, it does it. To the point where like I would actually kind of recommend people watch this if they're interested in just having a couple of beers, watching something dumb and gross for the holidays, you know?
I watched this Stone Cold Sober and I enjoyed it. So take that as you will. And I was not delirious from lack of sleep either.
I watched this on the brink of sleep and I'm very pleased to know that like I'm not just like imagining half the crap that happened in this movie.
It's a trip. It's a dumb time. You're gonna have a really dumb time, but you're gonna have a fun time.
Yeah, it's like the end of the Flintstones theme. You'll have a dumb old time.
That's definitely how that goes.
That, yes. But this is a very surprising, somewhat endorsement of The Killing Tree, folks. You heard it here from your pals at Christmas Creeps. Check it out on Amazon or Tubi right now. It's a good old time. Huh. So that's, I think the crankometer we wound up with was a positive 3, positive 2, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's miracles happen, right?
Do you believe in miracles?
I honestly would have expected the complete opposite.
Somehow, some way, the movie lived up to its kind of amazing poster, which is just like a silhouette of a Christmas tree with a skull in the middle. Which is just
a bunch of skeleton parts sticking out of it.
Mm-hmm. And also I notice on the poster there is like a Christmas ornament with like a Santa Claus like screaming in terror. There's not a single Santa Claus in this entire film.
Not a person, at least. I think there's one like plastic Santa in the party somewhere.
Right, but like not an actual like person. Like Santa Claus does not show up. A Santa Claus does not show up. This is a little bit of false advertising, but man, that would have just made the movie better.
It's a Santa Claus.
But yeah, that's going to round it out for this episode of Christmas Creeps. We're coming up on the hour mark here, which is almost as long as the film we talked about. But, Brad, what you got going on for Thanksgiving? You got any plans?
Just going to go have Thanksgiving with my folks. We're gonna mix things up this year, and we're gonna do a duck rather than a turkey.
Ooh.
Because because everybody that is going to be in it, we're going to have a bit of a smaller get together this time, and everybody likes dark meat. So we're just going to order a whole duck from a really good Chinese restaurant nearby.
That sounds amazing.
It's going to be good. What about you?
Well, we typically do Thanksgiving with my parents, and it's my mom's entire family. So it's a big family affair, and you're either girding your loins for madness or you're looking forward to it. There's really only two ways to go about that one.
And which camp do you fall into?
You know, I genuinely look forward to it. I actually happen to like my family.
I really like Thanksgiving. I think it's one of the most underrated holidays in the whole holiday calendar.
Absolutely.
It's an excuse to kick back, enjoy the company of your family. I mean, I guess if you hate your family or your family are like weird bigots or whatever, obviously it's not a good time. I totally get it. If you enjoy the company of at least your immediate family or family, though, it's a good excuse to get together.
It is.
Have a really good meal, hang out, throw back some drinks, play some board games. Watch some stuff on TV, be it football or the parade.
I was going to say the dog show.
The dog show. They do the dog. That's right. Dog show.
My family's all about the dog show.
I'm going to have to put on the dog show this year.
But speaking of which, like if you're the kind of person that, you know, your family is either not around or not interested and you do the Friendsgiving thing instead, you know, that's great too.
Friendsgiving is really good too.
I only say that because like literally today I got a junk email from Chipotle telling me to celebrate Friendsgiving at Chipotle. And boy, I can't think of many things I would rather do.
That's pretty sad. Did I tell you about the time that I got like a bajillion free Chipotle burritos?
No.
Do you remember this was probably like 6 years back now, at least. Remember there was a big brouhaha where a bunch of people got food poisoning at Chipotle?
Yeah.
And they were having like an awful time. They were getting really blasted PR-wise.
I remember that. Like, I did not stop going to Chipotle. My dad was just like, well, it's your funeral.
Well, full disclosure, I had already gotten food poisoning at Chipotle by that point. And I was like, I already know what I'm getting into. I've already ridden this dragon. But I'll eat that garbage. Where was I? So I lived in an apartment building at that point, and they mailed out a free burrito coupon to everybody.
Ooh.
Like everybody, I don't know if you ever got one, but like, I guess within certain markets where they thought they were suffering, I guess they mailed out a coupon, and it was no questions asked, free burrito, right?
Right, right.
You just rock up with a coupon, they scan it, and you get a free burrito. Obviously you can't add, you'd have to like the base burrito. You can't add guac or anything like that, but whatever.
Yeah.
Our apartment building had a bin for any unwanted junk mail that people didn't want.
Oh no.
And I pulled that bad boy out and went through, and I got about like 25 free burrito coupons. I think I didn't get through all, like, I made a concerted effort to use them regularly. I didn't get through them before they expired. I probably ate like 15 free burritos, though.
That is
a good time.
That is fantastic.
I mean, it's free burrito, dog.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
And I lived walking distance from Chipotle, so that also helped.
That's true. I mean, you get your steps in, and you get a burrito at the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the time I got like $100+ worth of, more than that. What? 15 times $500 worth of burritos.
$500 worth of burritos. That's a $750 value today.
Thanks, Obama. Yeah, that was the time I got all the free burritos. I did it also once with pizza. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
If there is ever a big promotion like that, honestly, I wouldn't be above like just slipping my way into that building again and checking out that bin. That's money in the bank.
Excellent. Friends. Excellent, my dude. Well, that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps, folks. We actually are going to recommend that you watch The Killing Tree, believe it or not. Have a brewski in hand. Have a good time with it.
If you are in for, like, a really dumb movie.
Right. I mean, this is very much a slasher film. This is very much that kind of a movie. If you're into that kind of thing, this is a good time.
Yeah, okay.
That's where we're going to leave it. Thank you so much for listening to this ridiculous podcast of ours, folks. We do this out of the goodness of our hearts, and because we just plain love Christmas movies. I like torturing Bradford with shit like this. And we enjoy doing this for you. So if you enjoy the show, leave a star rating and a review on your podcatcher of choice, or you can follow us on any of the socials. We're on, Twitter and Blue Sky and Instagram, all the fun places at Christmas Creeps. You know what you should also do is go to webpage, ChristmasCreeps.com, where we will have the link to our Discord channel. You really should join our Discord channel because we have a lot of fun talking about all kinds of wacky crap.
We're talking about murdering Figment right now.
Yeah, if you're a Disney person and you love Figment, please come to our Discord and help me fight the good fight and save Figment.
Or if you're a Disney person and you hate Figment, then come to the Discord. No, I don't hate.
Get you. Out.
I just have fun. I'm just having a laugh here.
You shut your dirty mouth.
If there's one group or people that hate Figment, it's absolutely Disney. So, except for when he's marketable, which is, I guess, the case, but this wasn't for a long time. Join us on the Discord. We have a lot of fun.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So that's going to do it for Christmas Creeps, folks. We have one more Shrieks Giving episode to bring you this month. We don't know what it's going to be yet, but it's going to be a good time.
Join us, won't you?
Please, thank you. Have a wonderful night, folks.
Good night.